It was a number of years ago, in fact, many years ago, I was went back to university, and I've done that several times in life. And I had an opportunity then to, while working on another degree, to take the counseling sequence at the university. And so I had a counseling professor. Now, I really liked the guy. He had been through a rough situation in life, was practicing for 40 years, administering mental health facilities. And then for the last 10 or so years, he had been a professor. And so he had seen a lot of things that had happened in life. And he himself had been through a lot of trials and tribulations because he himself was challenged by addictions, chemical addictions and alcohol addictions, as was his wife, who was an attorney. So he brought life experience to the table, as it were, to explain how to deal with life's challenges. And he was a manager of mental health facilities. And so self-help for him was a very important subject. But before the class really got started, he put a statement up on the board, which is not uncommon when you're teaching. You want to start, have a foundation of something. But it was a very interesting statement. And the statement he wrote on the board was, "Where there is no counsel, people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there's safety." Well, I'm sitting there waiting. And professor then said, "Does anyone know where this statement comes from?" Well, I waited, kind of gazed around the room a little bit. Nobody said anything. Now, there were 16 other graduate students there working, most of them destined to be professional counselors. I was doing it so that I could qualify to be a school counselor and have that piece of paper. Well, I didn't see anybody acknowledging that they had any idea where that statement came from. So I cautiously raised my hand and volunteered the answer that it came from the book of Proverbs in the Bible. The professor seemed to be stunned. I suppose he was surprised because that anybody even answered the question at all, and the class was unusually quiet. The professor asked me when the statement was written, and I said, about 3,000 years ago. More quiet. Well, the professor goes on to emphasize that his point, that counselors have been around for a long time, and that the counselor, but having good counsel is an essential part of self-care for people. You do that so that you can provide care for others. And that's a counselor's job, to enhance their sense of well-being. If we're in the book of Proverbs, that was Proverbs 11:14. I'm going to move to Proverbs 15:22. In Proverbs 15:22, "Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established." Ever have an experience that just didn't work out well, and you found out things the hard way that you only wished you would have known first? But had you asked, maybe you would have had some advice along the way that would be helpful. I know that there's a couple of banks that failed in California very recently, and I'm thinking, well, they didn't ask me about that because I had a bank failed in 1983, and they bothered to take $50,000 of my money, taught a valuable lesson. I was very unhappy about that when the bank failed and the FDIC came in and said, "Everything will be fine. We're in charge now." Except it wasn't fine. took a long time to resolve that. So had anybody asked, or had anybody gone through that, they'd be in a position to say, probably should do business with more than one bank. It's just an example of plans going awry. Don't put your eggs in one basket, is probably the old proverb there, the old saying. Well, with counselors, when we ask somebody for help, those counselors bear some of our burdens. And a counselor has to learn to deal with all of those different burdens that are placed upon him or her from anyone who would ask them for help. Well, as part of the university counseling course, the professor required all of the students, that included me, to write a paper about personal self-care. Well, he explained, you can't really help somebody else unless you take care of yourself, and you have to keenly be aware of what it takes to keep oneself healthy. He said, taking on the stresses of everyone else's life is going to take a toll on your own life. So we have to put our own lives in order. And therefore, he said, we should look in the mirror every Monday and see ourselves as we really are, warts and all. Brought to mind, my youngest brother's wife some years ago had breast cancer, and then it moved into the bone of the spine. Well, that's pretty serious stuff. And so he retired early to be a caregiver, and they had a middle school and a high school child and all the burdens that come with taking care of all of that. And he did the research, and he said 65% of personal caregivers precede the person they're caring for in death. Whoa, that's a pretty shocking statement. And of course, so he knew that self-care for himself was absolutely critical. So when we look at ourselves, we say, if we're going to help somebody else, we've got to look inward. And of course, that can be a very uncomfortable subject. It's always easier to look at someone else and point out their faults and then than it is to look in the mirror and look at our own. But as church members, we're expected to examine ourselves regularly, not just once a year, but on a regular basis. And so we are expected, as part of our own self-care, purge out the sin, purify our lives, and do better. In a sense, though, we are all to become counselors. We are all to be ready to help one another and bear one another's burdens. Recently, we went through the establishment of Israel as a nation as it came out of Egypt. And what was the purpose of that? Why was God bringing from one family and establishing a nation? Is what we read in 1 Peter 2:9. And many of you have now committed that one to memory in 1 Peter 2:9. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. The Apostle Peter is writing to the people who are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. Why would he say royal priesthood? Because that's our destiny. That is the expectation for all of us. Well, what do priests do? Well, some of us have in mind that they wear a collar and they have certain rituals that they go through. Or if we look at the ancient Israelites had priests that slaughtered animals for sacrifices, and all of those things may be true. But we also had an opportunity to hear Mark Robertson's sermon not too long ago about the many, many duties and responsibilities of the royal priesthood on into the future, a future that we're preparing for. And this largely means we're helping other people in a wide variety of ways, and we're serving other people. If we look at Romans 15:1, we read in this letter to the Romans, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not only to please ourselves. So you have the capacity, to the extent we have the capacity, to the extent we have the strength, the ability, we ought to bear the infirmities of the weak. In other words, those who may be weak. Now, some of us may be strong in one area and weak in another. And that might be an area of our strength that we can help somebody. So we have this as we are able to help those who don't have the strengths that we might have in our area. This is really mirroring what God has done for us. And we've recently gone over Exodus. We look at Exodus 6:6 and 6:7. We can see what God has done for us through spiritual Israel, what he did for physical Israel as he brought them out of Egypt. In Exodus 6:6, therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, I will rescue you from their bondage, I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Exodus 6:7, next verse, I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. The Israelites had become slaves under the Egyptians. It was a heavy burden. And God was going to lift that burden. And it's a prototype or a foretype of God lifting us out of sin, okay, taking that burden away through the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So we have that example, that physical example of what came later as for a spiritual example. Well, as I went through this counseling class in the year 2000, there was an academic group of counselors came up with a concept, a holistic model for treatment planning. Sounds nice and sophisticated. A holistic model. Basically, it's what in Southern talk, here's what you ought to do. Okay? And so what they did is they had the objective of self-care model they developed was to help both the counselors and their clients to have more joy in their lives. Whoa, that's kind of nice. Everybody wants a little more joy in their life. We can turn to Proverbs 12:20. In Proverbs 12:20, we can read about people who don't have joy in their life, immediately followed by people's explanation who does have joy in their life. In Proverbs 12:20, deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil. Doesn't sound very joyful, but the next half of the verse, but counselors of peace have joy. Wow. So our destiny is to be counselors, counselors of peace, and that will bring us joy. We are able to help somebody else. Perhaps we have a strength where they do not, and we can help them through that circumstance. After all, a well-adjusted, happy counselor is more likely to be in a position to help others. Now, I grew up on a dairy farm, and my dad was a very enterprising farmer, and I never saw him be cruel to the cows. He didn't beat them. Now, you read stories about it, you know, one thing or another dealing with livestock. But he had a principle. A contented cow gives more milk. So we grew up with that principle that you gave them positive stimulation. You didn't give them negative feedback. And so it was really that foundation that I learned early on the farm that seemed to fit right together with this university model. Well, the model, this holistic model for treatment planning, really has five major life tasks that were thrown at us in this class. And that was there are five major life tasks for self-care, how to take care of ourselves. And the first life task, interestingly enough, they said spirituality. Don't you roll your eyes when you hear the word spirituality nowadays? You go, yeah, I wonder what they're going to think now. And this is the definition they use for spirituality. An awareness of a being or force that transcends the material aspects of life and gives a deep sense of wholeness or connectedness to the universe. Actually, not too bad of a definition. However, we do know, when we look around, there's a universal desire around the world for the understanding of a greater power than oneself. And as a result, we all see all kinds of religions, Hinduism, Islam, Shintoism, Taoism, animism, voodoo, pantheism, Buddhism, and many more religions, including people in what I call churchianity, who go to church for social reasons, pursue a social gospel. They all seek some kind of connectedness to the universe in one way or another, yet all of those who seek to be spiritual, most of them don't follow the true God. In Psalm 14, verse 1, we know what the destiny of it is that people that do not follow God. In Psalm 14, 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none that does good. So we look around and all of those people that are following their spiritual path, if they're not following the true God and what God wants and expects, it's not going to be a good outcome. So the result of the world's spiritual thinking isn't good. While the definition may be good, We are fortunate to have the knowledge of the plan of God, and of course the upcoming Spring Holy Days are instrumental in helping us to guide our understanding. So first off is spirituality. How do you rank yourself in spirituality, they said? You know, how connected are you with the way things are in your spiritual life? So their life task one was to establish your spirituality. Well, I know where I stand, so I didn't have a problem with that one. The life task number two, they said, was they called it self-direction, and they quoted it this way. The manner in which an individual regulates, disciplines, and directs the self in daily activities in pursuit of long-range goals. The patterns of behavior and methods of adjustment to life that make up self-directions are sometimes referred to as positive personality traits that give one a stress-resistant personality. How many people you know that have a stress-resistant personality? Well, we all get nailed with stress, right? Some of it gets so overwhelming it becomes distress, which can be a challenge. So then how do we deal with it? What kind of self-direction do we use? Well, this self-direction or self-discipline or self-control is something that we all face as a challenge on a daily basis. So this assignment was broken down into about a dozen different areas. And we're going to step through the different areas of concern about self-direction or self-control. And as we go through each one, and I'm going to letters A through L, I'm just going to go down lines, just point two, but letters A through L. And first one is, if you rank yourself on 1 through 10, 1 being low and 10 being high, your sense of self-worth. That's A, sense of self-worth. People will set limits based on their own sense of self-worth. Some people don't feel like they're worth much and they become doormats for everybody else. They just don't breathe. They don't see what God has in store for them as readily as they could. I recall the book about our destiny, and that we have an incredible human potential, and that incredible human potential should be able to lift our self-worth so that we have higher expectations of ourselves, so that other people will see that we have that sense of self-worth. The second, or B, letter B, is sense of control. Now, we all know people whose lives are at some various stage of chaos. You might say they're out of control. And then there are others who are so desperate for control, they try to dominate everyone else. So it's really a balance there of sense of control. Do we have a sense of control over our own activities? Some people do, some people don't. Some people shrug, they throw up, they say, I'm a victim. The whole world is mean and woe is me. I'm going to die, eat worms and dirt and die. I mean, this whole negative approach, they just give up because now they don't have to do anything. They don't have any control over it anyway. Well, that makes life harder for them if they aren't controlling any part of their own life. Another category, or the letter C, is under realistic beliefs. How realistic are our beliefs? Now, in my function, I do talk to people from the Pacific to the Atlantic, from the Canadian border to the Gulf Coast. And there are really three categories of people. And we know people in all three categories. One of them is our realistic. They adjust to the way things are. They're realistic. Robert Ringer wrote a book many years ago. I think it was Looking Out for Number One, if that's the right book I'm quoting. And he said, you know somebody's realistic if they're achieving their objectives. If they're not achieving their objectives, well, there's something that they're not looking for. The people they're surrounding themselves with, their skills, their education, they're not properly looking at the obstacles before them. What are the resources that they need? So being realistic is an important characteristic. But then there are those that you wonder how they're working out in life, because we call those neurotic. They're partially out of touch with reality. They don't see. It's like they have cloudy vision. They only see from a certain distance, but not in others about the way things are. They're partially out of touch, not with everything, but just with some things. And frankly, to a degree, we're all a little neurotic, even if we don't admit it. Because we're all trying to come into focus. What does God want for us? What should we want for us based on that? And then, of course, there's the third category, psychotic. These are people that are totally out of touch with reality. And many of those are in institutions. They're just out of touch. My grandfather told the joke about a guy who was driving along and had a flat tire right in front of a high-risk lockup institution, and there was just a chain-link fence between the car and the inmates. Well, he had to change his tire, and he took the lug nuts off the wheel and set them to one side and got the new took the old flat tire off, put the new one on. But somehow he had tipped over the hubcap, and the little lug nuts went scattering off into the ditch, and he couldn't find them to put the wheel back on. And there's an inmate standing there watching him, you know, and the guy was horribly frustrated. You know, now what am I going to do? I've got only three wheels on the car. What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? Finally, the inmate sees the frustration, and he says, if you take one lug nut off of each of the other three, you can put them on one of that, and you got enough to get somewhere where you're going. He says, wow, how did you know that? And the inmate says, I may be crazy, but I'm not stupid. Okay. And so you have those who are psychotic. They will appear normal. And we all know some people that, but in large part, they have difficulties. And then the letter D, emotional awareness. Emotional awareness. Now, I'm sure that people will say that I walk around clueless in life about certain things, lack of awareness. I don't have... Say, oh, that's what they meant. Oh, that's what they wanted. Whereas that might be in one ditch where I'm maybe clueless. And then other people I see are overly imaginative. They make things up just to suit whatever it is in their mind with regard to, well, what he really meant, or what he really meant when he said was X, Y, Z. And now we really take a wild ride on there. So emotional awareness is probably a balance somewhere. Not clueless, but not overly imaginative. Letter E, problem solving and creativity. This can be interesting because some people are really strong in this area. Everything is seen as a problem meant to be overcome, and they're going to have creative solutions. The problem is these same people don't always have emotional awareness. And so there can be an issue there to resolving issues because they can step on toes. I know that in the marriage counseling sequence, they said, not everything your wife tells you is a problem to be solved. Huh? But it seems so natural that I'm just supposed to solve it. I said, not every problem is a problem for you to solve. You're just supposed to listen and wait for the invitation. Oh, okay then. So I have to develop that expertise or down the road, but still being able to be problem solving and have some creativity. Can't go in one ditch, can't go in the other. Wanted to show my wife how to change a tire in a car, and she explained that's why we have AAA. She only needs to know how to use the telephone. Okay, that her problem solving creativity, I can't say it wasn't effective, it's very effective. Okay, the letter F, sense of humor. Letter F, a sense of humor. Now, some people, this whole range goes from sour. We all know there may be people in your life have absolutely no sense of humor. And one of my brothers, my youngest brother's mother-in-law, he explained, had no sense of humor. I said, well, really? What do you mean? He says, well, if I tell a joke, I have to explain all of the background first so that there's a full comprehension, or it's just... It's not going to mean anything. He says, well, how much background do you supply? And he said, well, a lot. He says, first of all, I start out with, and first the earth cooled. And then we move forward from there. Well, then other people think everything is funny. They don't, I mean, just everything is a joke because that's how they deal with life's challenges or circumstances. So having a balanced sense of humor is critical for self-care. Letter G, nutrition. And we all know somebody who ignores any correlation or causation between what they eat and how their body functions. And then on the other ditch, we know people who are so extreme in every way that has to do with nutrition that that they can't socialize with anyone. And so I have to learn to be careful with that, that I have to know both issues on both range and somehow come in the middle. So that was the letter G, nutrition. Letter H is exercise. Well, my dad was 26 when I was born. So in my early 40s, he was in his late 60s. And I visited him in the spring. And of course, it's spring planning time. Well, it was going to be spring planning time. And so, sure, I'll help out my dad, who was younger then than I am now. And we had a tractor with a big bucket on the front, and we would go through the fields and through the plowed fields, which are rough, and fields that were plowed in the fall. And now the rain had washed off the top of any rocks that might be exposed. And it could be anywhere from the size of a baseball or bigger to a basketball. And so we're going across the field, half a mile one way, and then we would switch. The other person would drive the tractor, and the other one would walk along over the uneven ground, throw the rocks in the bucket, get to the end, we switch again all day long, from first light to where you couldn't see it anymore. And I was bedraggled. I was in rough shape. I did not realize how much better shape my dad was when he was approaching 70. And there I am, struggling to survive with any level of self-dignity left at the end of the day. And so there was an awareness that I just hadn't paid attention before. And this comes up every once in a while when I find out I have muscles I hadn't used for a while, as I found out this last week when I did a project and realized that the working out I do for my arms and my shoulders, because I've had an issue there before, and all of that was great, but I hadn't done the leg exercises the way I should. And all of a sudden, it took a few days of soreness to realize I got to be more balanced in what I do and how I do it. Some people are in one ditch. Some people are in the other. For self-care, we come in between somewhere with a reasonable amount. So letter H is exercise. Letter I is awareness of self-care. The letter I, self-care. Are we aware of our daily activities as to what we do that's helpful for our lives? Some people do things that are helpful. Some people repeatedly do things that are hurtful for their lives. So just an awareness of your daily schedule. Letter J is stress management. Now, without stress, we would all die immediately. Okay, why would I say that? Because our bodies are opposing forces, okay, which is the reason our heart pumps, the blood circulates. There's a certain amount of stress because you're zero blood pressure, folks. You're all done. So you got to have a certain level of stress, but when it gets too high, it becomes distress. So how do you prevent something becoming distress? And we all have different techniques. Some people don't get enough sleep. Life works a little better if you get some sleep. And we can all have a different level of a need for sleep. I have to have at least 6 hours a night. Some people have to have eight. Some people have to have 10. It would be really nice if I could get all six in a row. That's really nice. And then take one day a week and just sleep in. That's helpful. But other people will have different expectations. Another one is nutrition. My wife and I know a number of you are doing the intermittent fasting, and life has gotten better since we've done that. Restricted our eating to 8 hours a day. Except this last week when my brother visited, messed everything all up, and I managed to gain 4 pounds in 1 week. I'm going to try to not do that anymore. So stress management, what do we do for our stress management to keep it from becoming distress? And that was a letter J. Letter K I found interesting. And here's the university. Now, this was, well, it wasn't quite 20 years ago. And they have down gender identity. What in the world? I had no idea it was going to blossom. So, but I looked at Deuteronomy 22, verse 5. A woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor a man put on a woman's garment, for all who do are an abomination to the Lord your God. Well, other than the earlier in Genesis, where God created male and female, and then keep it distinctive. So we know the difference for there. So I didn't have any problem with that. I can rate myself a 10. I know what I am. I don't have to go to the doctor and ask him whether I'm a male or a female. And that's letter K. Letter L is cultural identity. Most of us have an idea of what our cultural background or identity is, what our native language is, and so forth. A number of us are third and fourth and fifth generation Americans coming from someplace else. So we have some cultural identity, and many people want to preserve whatever identity that is in a positive sense. So that was life task number two, was just going through those things for a sense of self-direction. Life task number three, work and leisure. If you want to be a balanced person with self-care, you've got largely three choices in life. You can live where you want to live. You can make the kind of money you want to make, or you can do what you want to do. Very few people manage to get all three choices. Live where you want to live, make the kind of money you want to make, do what you want to do. A lot of people don't get two of those choices. Some might get two, but not a lot. The crazy part is many people don't even get, they don't succeed in any one of those choices. They don't live where they want to live, make the money they want to make, or do what they want to do. And of course, we can look up the verse, you know, whatever your hand finds to do it with your might. Okay, so we want to take advantage of the opportunities that are before us, and that doesn't matter whether it's really work or play. So, life task number three, work or leisure, needs balance. Life task number four is friendship. Life task number four is friendship. Well, many years ago, I moved to an area, a new church area, decades ago, and I went to church, congregation was about 400 people. And I found myself lonely because I didn't have a close friend. And I prayed to God that he would deliver to me a friend. Didn't seem like it was forthcoming. There was no friend plopped at my door, just wasn't there. And so I just, well, I'm going to do the best I can. I got involved in every activity that I could. I was in, at that time, Spokesman's Club. I joined the moving crew for helping people move. I went on outings, church outings. I took my kids to youth activities and so forth. And I developed acquaintances. But years went by, and I was exasperated that I didn't see that I had a close friend. And then one day it hit me. I developed a best friend, and I didn't even realize it, that the friendship had grown a little bit by little bit over the years. That fellow had several kids. They were all friends with my kids. We spent a lot of time together. And the relationship grew without either one of us thinking about it or expecting anything. In Proverbs 18:24, in Proverbs 18:24, under friendship, we read, a man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there's a friend who sticks closer than a brother. I didn't have any other relatives in the area, but there was a close friend, and I've maintained that friendship to this day. Our children are grown, and to our surprise, none of them married each other, but they were more like brother and sister, so it just didn't seem right to them at the time. And so, and we think of a friend, if we look in James 2:23, in James 2:23, we read about Abraham being a friend of God. In James 2:23, and the scripture was fulfilled, which said, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Wow. Can we imagine ourselves being called a friend of God? That's a, take a big breath. How are we doing that we could, that God would want to call us a friend. If we look at John 15, in John 15 and verse 12, in John 15, verse 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant doesn't know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends, for all things that I've heard from my Father I've made known to you. So this is a very close relationship. If we are to be a friend of Jesus Christ, we are to follow God's commandments, it all makes sense that we think alike, like thinkers. Now, in Proverbs 16:28, we read the opposite. In Proverbs 16:28, there are things that separate people. Proverbs 16:28, a perverse man sows strife, meaning conflict, and a whisperer separates the best of friends. People might have been friends, but for whatever reason, they create a problem between friends, usually with their mouth, sometimes with their actions. So don't let anyone come between us and our friend, Jesus Christ. And that also means don't let any man come between us and God. How many people over the years have put their problem with somebody else between them and God, separating themselves from God because this other person who claimed to be a follower of God wasn't doing what they should, and it somehow it's God's fault. But claiming that other person's fault, or seeing other, and then attributing it to God is a problem. In Revelation 3:11, in Revelation 3:11, we read the statement attributed to Christ, "Behold, I come quickly, hold fast that which you have, that no man take your crown." Don't let somebody get in between you and your destiny. And that is, your, as a friend of God, a friend of Jesus Christ, don't let somebody else's faults get in between you and your friend. So task number four is friendship. So identifying the importance in life of friends, staying close to those friends, but don't let anybody get in between you and your best friend, God in Jesus Christ. Task number five, life task number five, it's love. Shouldn't be a shock to us. Everybody needs love. There are studies showing how much better a baby thrives if they're held closely, when they have skin-to-skin contact, when they're talked to, they're sung to, and their needs are attended. In fact, there's people that volunteer to go to hospitals to hold babies so they can have that close, warm contact when the parents, when the mother may have gone through a serious surgery or something, can't hold the baby. They have people then that will maintain that close contact with the child, and the child will do much better at that point. It's just the same as us. Staying close to God is a prerequisite for staying close to each other. If we're close to God, it's going to be a lot easier to stay close to each other. If we take a look in Deuteronomy 7, verse 9, in Deuteronomy 7, 9, we read about these prerequisites. If we're going to love someone else on this earth, it's important to keep our relationship with God first. In Deuteronomy 7, 9, "Know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keeps his commandments to 1,000 generations." How long is 1,000 generations? It's longer than any of us will be around in this life. But you see, God sees the big picture. and those who are close to him, and he can tell if we keep his commandments, then that he is faithful to us, not just for us, but for generations to come. If we look at 1 John 5, verses 2 and 3. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. So there's the key right there. By this we know. Well, and look at the next verse in 1 John 5, verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not grievous. Another translation will say burdensome. It's not hard to do the right thing. Sometimes it feels hard, but we know ultimately the outcome is for our benefit and for the benefit of those around us. So God isn't asking too much of us, because if we keep his commandments, we're showing love, not just to ourselves, but to others as well. Well, how will people know if we love God and keep his commandments? And we're in, and look at John 13:35, by this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. That's one way to see. How loving are we to each other? Now, I know we all have busy lives, and love comes in different ways, and how to help different people. But that is critical, because everybody needs love. So if we demonstrate that to each other in a way that they understand, and I might refer to Love Languages, sermon from some years back on the love languages of God, which work love languages between people, how people perceive love. I'll just incorporate that here by mention. But it's critical, not just love for others, but love for self, which is self-care. So we've gone over now five major life tasks of the self-care model. What do we have to do to care for ourselves? We've looked at spirituality. We can ask a question, how much faith do you have in your faith? There's a lot of different people claim to be spiritual, quote unquote. And we look at that and we say, that's got bad outcomes. But how much faith do we have in our faith that what God is telling us is true and will have a positive outcome? Well, we're here because we believe God. The second major life task is self-direction. How well can we direct our daily activities in life with regard to our sense of self-worth, sense of control? How realistic are beliefs? Do we have emotional awareness? Do we have problem-solving and creativity and balance? Do we have a balanced sense of humor? Are we nutritionally aware? Do we have some sense of the appropriate exercise? Do we have an acknowledgement of self-care on a daily basis? Are we good at stress management? Gender identity should be pretty firm. Cultural identity. Well, we know that from 1 Peter 2:9, God has made a holy nation, a royal priesthood from those who are of the children of Israel. And we know the children of Israel in this time is a spiritual body, those who are believers in Christ. So that cultural identity is critical. Then the third life major life task is work and leisure. What do they say? All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And some people are guilty of being in one ditch, and some people are guilty of being in the other. Some people don't do enough, and some people play too much. There's a balance that fits there. Fourth major life task is friendship. Are we a friend to God? And do we show ourselves friendly so that we develop those friendships in life to others? Fifth is love. Do we love God first? And then are we able to spread that love in a way that other people will understand it? So these are five major tasks, life tasks, and of course the list of subtasks. And if we look in the mirror and we rate ourselves in every category, how well we're doing, then the question is, well, what are we going to do about it? Once we look at ourselves and we rank ourselves, and how in tune are we with God and ourselves? And this is where each one of us can develop a self-care plan. And we can decide what we want to do in each category and become a better person. Now, I discovered that professor had required us all to write a self-care plan. I recently discovered that self-care plan. And after many years, I read through the detail, and it was about 20 pages, typewritten, double-spaced, with all the attributions and all the quotes on it. And I'm embarrassed that I haven't accomplished everything on that self-care plan. But I'm also pleased that at least there was one there that I had an awareness that I had some goals that I could progress to, that I could know where I was and where I wanted to be. The Apostle Paul was able to summarize it in Ephesians 4:22. In Ephesians 4:22. And he gave us the ultimate self-care plan. Ephesians 4:22. That you put off concerning your former conduct the old man which grows corrupt according to deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Verse 24, and that you put on the new man which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. So the Apostle Paul says, take the stuff we don't want and put it off. Get rid of it. Like a coat that doesn't fit or that needs patching, just get rid of it and put on the new man, the new behavior, which is more godlike behavior in true righteousness and holiness. So if we follow the commands of God, we renewed by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, and we do that memorial each year at Passover. We change from our former way of doing things, and we put on the new man. We become persons of righteousness and holiness. So we're about to approach, as we approach now the spring holiday season, let's each look at ourselves privately in our hearts and say, what is our self-care plan?